Good evening. You are listening to the HIV Hour, which is broadcast every first and third Thursdays at 7 p.m. and repeated throughout the month. Check the Radio Reverb schedule on the website radioreverb.com and 97.2 FM and DAB+. You can check out our social pages on Twitter and Instagram at HIV_hour, and you can join our Facebook page at HIV Hour Reverb. And why not drop us an email, contact us on hivhour@gmail.com. We love listening to you and hearing your voices. You can listen and subscribe to our famous podcasts. Just type in HIV Hour on your favourite podcast platform. To listen to the full HIV Hour show, go to the Radio Reverb website Listen Again page. The HIV Hour, positively helping to change hearts and minds.
You've done it again, David.
Oh, no.
So well. How are you, David? We're here again.
Well, thank you. Good to see you.
Yes, yep. And to see you. What have you been up to on this fair?
We had Pride weekend go past, didn't we?
Yes.
It was a bit of a wet one and windy one, but it was lovely. I went down to watch the parade and support all our lovely community groups. And it was lovely to see people like the Sussex Beacon and Terence Higgins Trust in the parade and Lunch Positive and all that lot.
So windy, yes.
It was.
A bit windy, wasn't it?
Yes, but I mean, I think it's worse when they were assembling on seafront, but I think I joined them about midday.
I had a good weekend. It was very busy. Yeah, I was DJing a bit, which was really good. I loved it. So that's good. I mean, it's just me and you today in the show. Sue, Stephen and Tony are a bit busy, aren't they? But we've got a great show, actually, haven't we?
We've
got two amazing people who are sitting across from us. Do you want to introduce
them? So welcome to Alan Spink and Lucy Hutchinson. You both work for the Sussex Beacon. Good evening.
Hello, we do indeed.
Yeah, we do. Good evening.
Oh, good.
It's so good to have you on, actually. It'd be good to talk about the Sussex Beacon and your own HIV stories. So, thanks for coming on. And you're going to be with us for the show, actually, aren't you? So we're going to...
I think we are, aren't we?
We're going to make a show of it.
Yeah. Changing the songs and everything.
We're going to make a right show of it, aren't we?
We are. We will.
So shall we have a song and then get on with it?
Let's do. I don't fancy being bored, so let's play.
It's not being bored. You're scaring everyone. Yeah, it's Under the Bridge, which is one of Lucy's favourite tracks, but we'll have a chat to her in a bit anyway. So this is Red Hot Chili Peppers. So welcome back to the HIV Hour, 97.2 FM and DAB+, and of course RadioReverb.com. So just to say, actually, before we get on with the show, Radio Reverb is doing a Reverbathon, which they've done before, which is a couple of days of live programming. It's going to be on September the 16th and 17th, which is a Saturday and Sunday. We need donations. I mean, basically, it's to get some donations and
the whole station is a charitable station. Yes. We have no adverts, we don't receive any sort of sponsorship like that, and so it's really essential that we raise funds to support the cost of the studio and what have you.
Yeah.
The electric bill, the cleaning bill, because Josh is always messy in the studio. You should see him, listeners. Yeah.
Well, I was just cleaning.
You can donate to us on paypal.me/radioreverb, no more details about the Reverbathon itself.
Just come down, support us. There'll be more information on social media, but yeah, it's the 16th and 17th September, and it'd be great to see you all. But support us and donate it as much as you can. It's much appreciated.
And tell your friends.
So, David.
Great. So you've just been listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers play Under the Bridge, which is a great song, and that was chosen by Lucy. So, Lucy, you're first time as a guest on the show, welcome. And we mentioned earlier that you work for the Sussex Beacon. We're going to talk about the Sussex Beacon a bit later, if I may. Can we talk about you and what's your sort of journey? Because some people recognise you within our community, and now you're obviously working for the Sussex Beacon. So tell us a bit more about yourself.
Okay, yeah. So, it is my first time here, but I'm really, really quite excited to be here. And I've been around the HIV community for quite a long time. I was diagnosed, I think it was 95. Oh. I think it's really hard for me to remember around that time, but I think it was 95. But I do remember that at the time that antiretrovirals were just sort of on the precipice. It was still the sort of AZT, coming away from the AZT. I do remember that really clearly, which tended to really... put an emphasis on my choices at the time around treatment and what I wanted to do and stuff like that. So I do remember that was going on, and I actually then remember when I seroconverted, because right. I was able to think back, and there's quite an interesting story around that if we get to that. So yeah, I've been around the HIV community since then, and got involved and accessed a lot of the services like Body Positive and Open Door and the Lawson Unit, and so people might know my face from back then.
Yeah.
And I also went off travelling around the world and stuff like that, because wow. I wasn't sure, you know, whether I was going to be around, you know, because at the time it was still that sort of death sentence.
Very brave
day,
thing so, to do, yeah.
Yeah, so I was sort of away for quite a few years and then came back, and then I had children, you know, as time goes on, had children and things changed for me. So I was quite quiet for quite a while, but as my kids have got older, I'm sort of back a lot more forward-facing yeah. and out there. And I always was in the early days when I was much younger. Very outspoken, would tell anybody about my HIV, you know, I would, you know, sort of be, yeah, I was very much a challenger of a stigma and the way people thought about it. And I guess I'm back doing that now, really. Yeah.
Wonderful. I mean, your life experience would be a great inspiration to people who are more recently diagnosed. And it's wonderful to think that, you know, it's nearly 30 years ago now that you were diagnosed.
How did you feel when you got diagnosed? What was going through your head?
Oh, God. I mean, it was a complete shock, even though, I mean, obviously going back to that song, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge, it's about addiction, and that was part of my background. So, although in my mind I kind of thought I probably had some sort, because I was an injecting drug user, so there was obviously some risk there, and I knew I had some form of HEP because I was bright yellow, so I knew that was going on, but I still think in my mind that HIV wasn't a thing, you know? So I was still really, and I guess because at the time I felt reasonably healthy, I wasn't showing many signs. I mean, I was showing some signs of illness, but it was a real shock, and it was a complete, I mean, it just floored me, absolutely floored me.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit more about your seroconversion, because you mentioned that just now.
Yes, yeah. So basically what happened was I went to live in America when I was 19. My drug use in England and the way that I was living was pretty scary. And I was thinking maybe if I go away and I get away, it would put me away from everything that I knew and give me a fresh start. Mm-hmm. So I went to America to be a nanny. So these poor people thought that they were gay. I know, honestly, it's crazy. It's such a brilliant. I love this story. It's so good. So they thought they were going to get Mary Poppins. Yeah. You know, at the time there was lots of like these very middle class American families wanting nice white English nannies. Yes, it really was. That was exactly what they wanted. So I think they thought they were going to get Mary Poppins, and what they got was someone who was on the run from their drug addiction.
Wednesday Adams.
Yeah. Something like that. So I went to America, and of course my addiction followed me. At the time I was living in Washington, D.C., and so that was sort of split into four areas, and there were some ghetto areas and then some very kind of affluent areas.
Yeah.
And of course the ghetto areas was where I felt much more comfortable. I grew up in South London. I wasn't used to segregation, and that's exactly what it was like. It was segregated very obviously. So I spent a lot of my time in those areas using drugs. I got myself a boyfriend that was on the run. He was actually like an ex-gang member. He was on the run from the, he was on his third strike, and third strike over there means life.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He literally was on the run, and I just thought we were like Bonnie and Clyde, and thought I was, you know, some sort of something out of some movie. And so that was kind of my lifestyle whilst having this separate life. So I was sometimes trying to be a nanny and hold everything together. So you can imagine that it just spiraled out of control. But yeah, I remember getting really, really sick one time, and a sickness like I'd never known.
Mm. Sounds a bit like mine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and very much like glandular fever.
Yes.
So that real, you know.
Had all the tests and
And so I ended up going to the doctors about a week later when I could first get out of bed. And of course, I just didn't fit the demographic of like what they would have, because lots of people, you know, HIV at that time was, you know, there was high diagnosis happening, there was all sorts of things going on with it, but I definitely wouldn't have fitted the demographic. I was 19 years old. They didn't ask me any questions about my lifestyle or what I was up to or anything like that, so it just completely got missed. But definitely That's when it was, and the timeline of where my sort of CD4 count was and all those sorts of things, you know, really matched up. So
Did you come back to UK after that then, when you see it converted?
No. So I carried on because we just thought it was glandular fever. Mm. So
That it passed and gone.
Yeah. So I saw out my time in America. I was possibly going to come back early because they were thinking of kicking me out, but again, that's another story. But I did stay out my time, and I came back to the UK, but then just went full on into my drug use for about another year and a half. And then I got clean. Mm. So, and that was kind of what sort of set me off thinking, actually, I need to get tested and need to find out what's going on. So,
it's a journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a journey.
It's a journey.
So then you came back to the UK and... what happened? How did you get into doing work, the HIV work, like
activism and things?
Yeah.
Well, I guess being diagnosed with HIV as a very young woman, I felt like I needed to be speaking out and making people aware, because there was still very much an idea that it didn't happen to heterosexual people.
Yeah.
There were some ideas that drug users would get it, but again, I still think that wasn't really...
There was no visibility amongst them.
No, not at all. Yeah. So, and because of the nature of the sort of person I was, especially at that time, I was quite confident and outspoken. And I also felt like, because I wasn't sure how long I had left and what was going to go on, I guess that turned into a little bit of standing up and doing what I could.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of speaking in schools and colleges and stuff like that. Right. Yeah. And just, and like mentoring wasn't around, you know, but the Lawson unit would always call me up if there was another woman around to just sort of go and support other women and things like that. So, and I was very looked after by the gay community, you know, at places like Open Door and Body Positive. They sort of wrapped their arms around me. So I felt very held and... Yeah. Wanted to be able to do that for others. So, I was always quite... And I quite like... I don't mind an argument, and I don't like standing up for myself. Yeah. So I was quite willing to challenge people and the way that they dealt with me and other people at that time. And they still do.
Still goes on today with stigma, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's what we need, isn't it, really? We need people like that. Yeah. It's like yourself to be like that.
Yeah.
So we're going to have... we'll bring Alan in now, actually. Alan's been sitting there very quiet, let me know.
Yeah, I've been sniggering a lot.
So we're gonna have one of your tracks you've chosen, and then we'll come back and have a chat with you, and then So, what is your first track that you chose?
I think it's Being Boring, isn't it?
I think it is. And who sings that? Anyone?
The Boring Pet Shop Boys, of course.
Okay, we'll listen to it, and we'll come back.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.
You're listening to the HIV Hour on RadioReverb.com, 97.2 FM and DAB Plus in the Brighton area. And don't forget, you can listen to our podcast on your favourite podcast platform. As you know from earlier in the show, we're also joined by the wonderful Alan Spink, who works at the Sussex Beacon. Hello, Alan.
Hello. Hello, David.
Why did you choose that song in particular?
I had three songs that I wanted to choose, and I had two. This was always the number one, because there's a particular line in it which always cuts me up. I don't know if I can say it, but I'll try.
Okay.
It's the one about the 90s, summer here. Can't say it.
Summer here and summer
there.
Here.
We go.
Yeah,
can't say it. It always cuts me up. And it's from the very first time I heard it, I thought how true that was. Mm. And it is true. And it always, I like it. I love the song because it reminds me of people that maybe I hadn't thought about for a while.
Yeah.
So whenever I hear that, I get faces.
Mm.
That come, you know, flashing back into my mind, people that I hadn't thought about for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's, I like that. I like that it jogs my memory and triggers me, actually.
It's a bittersweet, isn't it? You remember the value that their lives brought to yours, but the loss as well.
But I can wail. Songs just really, I can cry my eyes out of songs. I was wailing when I'm at home, just wail myself to certain words and certain lyrics.
They tug at your heartstrings, don't they, songs? Yes. Good lyrics, they do. So, Alan, you've been on the show before, haven't you? No, you haven't, have you?
I've been on this show. No, let me just think back to the shows I've been on. No, I haven't been on this one.
So you're both HIV hour virgins. Well, welcome. It's long overdue. I should have had you on long ago because you're currently working for Sussex Beacon, but you've also done some volunteer work and work with other charities in the sector within our local community, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I've done quite a lot of work with the Martin Fisher Foundation in particular.
Yeah.
Stiggy the Stigma Sore campaign.
And yes, you have an alter ego, I believe.
I do. I am Stiggy the HIV Stigma Sore.
Right.
Cross me at your peril.
Right.
I will take you back into prehistoric times and destroy you. Horrible HIV stigma.
Oh, you should narrate children's books.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Have you worn the Stiggy the Dinosaur suit?
Yes, but not the one that they made, the Martin Fisher Foundation. I tried to when they took it to Parliament, but it was made for a much smaller person than I.
Yeah.
So, I've had a go, and I've had other different, I've got suits Fantastic. With dinosaurs on and silly things like that.
Brilliant, brilliant. I mean, I do listen to your, read your Twitter feed, and you do some wonderful work and comments. And
occasionally.
Yeah. So that's Stigmasaur, is it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, actually, the platforms I use are Twitter. I will not call it X.
Right.
It's
quite right.
Twitter, and it always will be to me, and so Facebook. But I'm not so sure if I really like Facebook so much.
Mm. Yeah, there's so many now, isn't there? It's difficult to know which is good and which is not at the moment.
Yeah, I actually think probably none of them are good.
Yeah. So what is your role at the Sussex Beacon?
As of today, I am the Community Services Team Supervisor.
Oh, right.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We've had lots of, yes, it is. We've had quite a lot of people changes over the last few months, and that there are still changes happening at the Sussex Beacon, but we've always been very, very strong in the community services team. We know what we're doing and we know where we want to go.
Yeah.
And I think we feel as a team that from today we've basically been given the mandate to take the team in the direction we want to develop the services, and we're taking community services out to the community. We've dropped that, if they want us, they'll come up to the Beacon to find us. I fully accept that as you get older, mobility issues, that Sussex Beacon isn't always the easiest place to get to.
No, it's like 400 foot up a big hill.
Which is not
very well served by bus services.
No,
it's a wonderful building.
You need all sorts of
you can't get there in icy weather.
No.
You need escalators.
Yeah. No. Or a car.
Or bare roads.
As an inpatient, I was snowed in there once because taxis and buses just couldn't get there.
Yeah,
even staff had to sleep in the offices.
It's beautiful in the summer.
Yeah.
It's also beautiful in the winter if it's not raining. So anyway, what we've decided to do, because we don't just cover Brighton and Hove for the last 4 years, we've had a remit to take some of our services out right across Sussex.
Okay.
So I support people, currently I support people in Worthing, Crawley, Battle, Hastings, Eastbourne, lots in Brighton as well, but all over Sussex.
Mm. That's a huge geographical area. I mean, that's East and West Sussex is a big county, isn't it, together?
It's huge, yeah. So what we've discovered is there is this huge need for our services out in the community. And so Lucy, as part of her peer mentoring and other projects that she runs, has she developed an idea to take our services to Crawley. So what we do now is periodically we hire a room in Crawley Library and invite the Crawley patients to come in for a little bit of like chat and consultation. And for some of them, it's the first time they've ever met somebody else living with HIV.
Wonderful.
And on the back of the success of that, we've now got the Women and Families Coordinator, Eve, today she's in Brighton Library. Where is she tomorrow?
Eastbourne.
So she's in Eastbourne tomorrow, and then she's already started some work in Hastings.
Great.
And we're also planning on going west, possibly out to... we're going to Worthing, aren't we, in a couple of weeks? We're also looking at going to Chichester as well.
Yeah.
So that it's interesting, isn't it? Because we are so lucky in this town, aren't we, with services. And then, as you said, there's so many people who can't access Brighton and Hove services that need support. And that's why this is such a good idea.
Yeah,
As you say, one person, not your first person to see somebody with HIV. I mean, that's like, must be such a good feeling to speak to someone who's got HIV and knows.
Just sharing that lived experience and stories and information and experience of doctors and treatments and other things like that.
It's quite amazing. It really is to talk to somebody who's never spoken to somebody else living with HIV. And it's a very privileged position to be in as well. And I would say for myself, in my several decades on this planet of all sorts of jobs I've done, this is far and away the best job I've ever had in my life. It brings me so much joy, and I actually get up quite early to go to work. I get told off for it too. I just love
more
really
in the morning.
Love my job. Not quite that early.
But yeah, but just knowing that you're making a positive difference to people's lives.
I hope so.
You can really change someone's outlook on life, can't you?
I really hope so. And I'm not sure that any of us, when we start working there, realise the cross-section of people that we would come across. From people with issues around their gender, people with issues around their sexuality. We work with asylum seekers. We know what we actually come face to face with people who have no recourse to public funds. And it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking the conditions that people are made to live in, fleeing a country where they're likely to be killed for being gay. And if they were to discover that they were HIV positive as well, they wouldn't stand a chance of surviving. And when something like that happens, and we've got a case like this quite recently, we put a little shout out internally and call on the people that we know. And it's amazing. It's heartwarming, isn't it? The amount of support that we get for people in this situation. And then we find ourselves going to things like Crawley Pride. And why not?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So we didn't ask you about it. So your journey with HIV, I mean, are you okay to just talk a little bit about that to our listeners?
Yeah, I am. I rather wish I'd been asked first, because it's nothing like as interesting as Lucy's. But in a way, it's, yes, of course, all of us, we're as valid as each other.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have no idea where I got HIV from.
And many don't, do they? So
no, yeah. I really can't. Even from the And when I was tested and tested positive, I knew it was a window of only, I think, 3 months from my previous test. And believe you me, there really weren't very many to choose from, but I really have no idea. I could never put my finger on a particular incident that where I acquired HIV. And a long time ago, I gave up worrying about that.
So I
don't remember the month, and I don't remember the day of the month when I was diagnosed. I remember being diagnosed. I'd gone to the sexual health clinic because I had a little rash, and I thought it was probably NSU or something. Yeah, when they Andy, it was. I think he's just retiring from the clinic. He's the one that told me my results, that I was HIV positive, and I was just cold, went cold and numb. And I went home and realised I had to tell my new partner. And I remember telling him and crying a lot and saying, you know, if you want to end this now, end it, because I'll understand at this moment. But no, he waited 12 years to end it, which is okay. So yeah, should I laugh? Yeah,
you got 12 years out of it. Yeah, that's good mileage, isn't it?
I hope he's honest. But unfortunately, what I did at the time was I was probably one of the self-stigma. I self-stigmatized myself. I just shut myself away from society. I shut myself away from the gay scene, and I basically hid. Occasionally going out with him, but I was so scared of people finding out about my status. And that lasted 10 years. About 10 years, yeah. And then the relationship broke down. And as we find with peer mentoring, a lot of the times when people come to us for peer mentoring is when a long-term relationship breaks down.
There's a security within that relationship, isn't there?
Yeah. And suddenly you're faced with having to deal with it, and having potentially deal with dating, and telling other people about your status. And so it was 10 years of absence. And when I arrived back, I made some terrible choices, but really exciting. A little bit of dabbling with the old drug scene, which was interesting and slightly frightening at the same time. And then with the help of Gillian Dean and Eileen Nixon and a couple of other people at the Lawson, I started to conquer it. And I can remember really clearly the actual day that my self-stigma melted away. Right. It was to do with the HIV Stigma Sore project.
Right.
And the Southeast Today had come to the Lawson. They wanted to do a little interview about the project. And the cameraman had me walk along Eastern Road outside the clinic. And then they interviewed me and said it'd be on 6:15 that evening. So I went home. I was on my own. Went home, turned the telly on, watched it. And the first thing that came on was me walking towards the camera, and the voiceover said, "Alan Spink is HIV positive." And at that moment, I thought, what, can't swear, have I done?
Yeah.
And then I thought, can't change it. What's done is done.
It's done.
And just thought, okay, now I'll wait and see what the fallout is. And I live in a small coastal village. I just thought this is, I thought I lived in UKIP land at the time. And I was just waiting for the excrement through the letterbox and the shouted insults. But actually, I've got a dog that I used to walk along the cliffs. And all I got over the next couple of days was a few people saying, saw you on telly the other day. And then one of my neighbours across the road came over and asked me about it.
Right.
And that was it. Wonderful. No negativity whatsoever. And from that day, self-stigma went.
It's, that's what it is, it's about talking to the neighbours. She actually came to ask you, so that's what the, hit zero HIV stigma day. It's that even one person asking you about HIV and your journey, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely.
So we'll have you, one of your songs. So we're going to choose your next song, Alan. Do you remember which one it was?
It's Erasure, Chorus.
Why did you choose this?
Because it's actually, I'm not sure if many people know, I love Erasure. I've always liked Erasure, seen them way too many times. And I'm not sure many people realise that a lot of their songs actually have a message.
See, I didn't know that until I listened to it today. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know that.
This is, and this song's been around for a long time, and it's a warning about the end.
Yeah.
They covered up the sun, and all the birds have flown away, and the fish is in the sea. They've all gone because we've done it. Right. And it's I love it. I don't care. I love it.
Hello, you're listening to Chorus by Erasure on the HIV Hour broadcast on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and on DAB Plus Radio. That song was chosen by Alan Spink, who is joined with us with Lucy Hutchinson, both from the Sussex Beacon. So we've got you both together now. We've heard your sort of little background stories. Well, not big little stories at all, are they?
Big little stories.
Welcome back to you both. You're both working for the Sussex Beacon, an organisation that's very close to my heart. It's helped me a lot over the years. You just mentioned earlier that you, Alan, that you've taken on a new role. We briefly mentioned also about Lucy's role. Lucy, can you expand a bit more about what your role is?
Yeah, sure. So I initially started as the peer mentor coordinator. So the Sussex Beacon runs a mentoring programme, and that's people living with HIV that are in a place where they feel like they want to support and give back, and they're going to get alongside and support people, whether it's newly diagnosed or people that have been living with HIV for quite a while but they've come up against some kind of brick wall, or they might have some comorbidities that have come along that have really thrown things into the balance. Often you're finding people who are struggling with drug and alcohol issues as well. So there's lots of things that come up. And and it's about that, again, it's about that really, really powerful thing of lived experience, because HIV is incredibly unique. And obviously we all know that, living with HIV. And lots of people want to kind of, who don't live with HIV, want to try to relate with their own stories. I've had it so many times when people go, oh, well, this happened to me, or I had cancer, or I had HEP, or I had... And they're trying to relate to you, but what it ends up doing is being quite condescending, because it's a very unique illness. Or sometimes now doctors will say, oh, it's just like diabetes, it's treatable. And it's like, no, because and it is because of the stigma.
Yes.
know, and the way that people view it, and the way that people still view it. And so it can be very isolating. And so being able to speak to somebody who really gets it and the complexities of it as well, is so powerful. And that's obviously where mentoring is completely unique. And alongside, great care, medical care, mentoring runs really, really well, because they can support with treatment changes or just, taking away that sort of doctor speak. And obviously mentors can speak to people about, sex, relationships, all those sorts of things that people might want to talk about but not quite sure how they start to have those conversations and start to really normalise and actually celebrate us as human beings, sexual beings, wanting to go out into the world, mothers, fathers, partners, lovers, all the different things that we are, and encourage and support each other to sort of reach those goals and be the people that we can be. So that's what I started off doing, and so I kind of coordinate that. There's training that's involved in that. So Alan and I have just completed a training course quite recently, so we're training new peer mentors. We also had three people from Portsmouth that joined that training. So Alan had made some really good links with Portsmouth. They just don't have any mentoring in Portsmouth at all. Right. And so we were able to organised with them to get three mentors to us to be trained. So now there's going to be some mentors in Portsmouth, you know, and that area, which is so, again, it's so, you know, so needed. Because like what Alan spoke about before, when you, you know, Brighton and Hove is amazing, so many brilliant services. You go out into East and West Sussex, there's very little. So when you speak to people out in those areas, they really are isolated. And so again, the more mentors that you can create, the more, you know, the less isolation people are going to feel. So that's what I started doing. And that's when I realised, as I was going out and visiting people, because luckily I have a car, so I was able to go out and visit people out in East and West Sussex who needed mentoring, I really started to realise that there's lots of people who are very isolated out in these areas who just can't get to Brighton. And that's where, you know, we've been talking about that fact of, like, what can we do for these people? You know, we need to be much more outward facing. And so it started to grow like that. And I also do the Living Well programme, which is fitness. So we have a little fitness class that's run at the Beacon. We've just extended that to two classes on a Monday. And we're looking at fitting in another one on a Thursday. And then again, that's for people who want to get back into fitness. We really need to look after our health and well-being.
We're getting older.
Lots of people, they feel like they can't access the gym, whether physically they're just not at that place yet, or again, that idea of feeling awkward or not safe or whatever. And so, you know, coming to somewhere where they feel safe and they can take exercise at their own pace. And also, again, that they can say, oh, I've had a crappy week, my medication's making me feel, you know, all those sort of conversations that you can just have nice and openly. So I've been doing that, and I really love doing that. And I just coordinate the mindfulness as well, which is, I don't run it, but again, it happens at the Beacon, and I just put that together. So I might, you know, get the mindfulness course lady in, who's actually a nurse at the Beacon as well. So again, she's got really experience of being connected to the Beacon, and we'll run a course, and then there's continuation sessions that go on all the time. So, and that's just really booking rooms and making sure things are running smoothly. So it's quite a lot there, I guess.
Yeah, and Alan, your projects have, I've been one of your...
Yeah.
Not clients, is it?
Oh, you were a client.
Would you like to tell listeners a bit about your...
Yes, Josh. Do you mean the 3 days when you turned into a drag queen?
Yes, like I'm dressed now.
Exactly, and you look gorgeous, but those heels are a little bit high for you.
A bit too high, do you think?
A little bit too high.
Yes.
So just over a year ago, I was lucky enough to go to a Fringe event, and it was the big Brighton drag pageant where lots of local drag queens compete for a title, and it's incredible. The show was amazing, and I was absolutely blown away by the amount of talent on display. And when they got to the last 10, each of them were interviewed, and almost all of them mentioned how drag had helped them with their mental health. Alongside that, I'd been watching a TV show called Drag SOS, where Cheddar Gorgeous actually was one of them. They would go to small towns in the UK and look for people whose lives had hit a brick wall. Didn't matter if they were men, women, straight, gay, whatever. And they gave those people an opportunity to become a drag queen, to try and achieve something in their lives. And sort of in my head, I put the two things together and thought, can't we do something like that for people living with HIV? So that was where Drag Queen for a Day, or DQ for a Day, was born. Then the torturous process of getting funding came along, and also the procedures and all the rules that we had to follow, and acquiring all the gear, of course, which was great fun.
But you loved that.
Oh, God, yeah. It's become a hobby. So eventually we got the funding, and then I had to find the participants and also the drag queens. So the idea was there would be 8 people living with HIV, 8 drag queens who would be paired up for 3 days. And at the end of the 3 days, we'd have 8 new drag queens or drag babies. And I'm thrilled that Josh was brave enough to take part as a participant, because I don't believe Josh's been a drag queen. Do you have a previous career, Josh?
No. Did show an interest.
My dad's always wanted to be a drag queen.
Okay, well, it does, so it runs in the family. That's fair enough. So we
sorry, Dad.
We call on all sorts of local contacts, and I went and watched some shows, and if I thought somebody was like, they could be, yeah, that he could be, or she or they could be the potential drag queen mentor, I would approach them. And really, it was so easy. In fact, we ended up with 9. And I also had the help from a wonderful person called Alex, who was my co-producer, with their contacts as well. And So getting the drag queens was relatively easy. Getting the participants wasn't quite so easy. Everybody that said they wanted to do it was petrified. There's no question about that. But with a lot of gentle coaxing and no bribery, actually. No bribery at all, other than the offer of lots of gorgeous frocks and makeup, which seemed to work. So it happened. It happened in March this year. And the first 2 days were held at the Sussex Beacon, where the participants learned about drag, learned about makeup, learned about frocks, and for some of them learned about sewing machines. And the drag queens held back and typically didn't drag up, but it was, the focus was on the participants. And we showed them a few films on stigma, showed them some films on mental health, a film on homophobia. And then on the third day, we decamped to the Curzon, as it was. I think it's shut down now.
It's open, but it's not.
It had a funny little theatre bar upstairs. Yeah. And so we had this little theatre bar to ourselves where everybody got their drag on. And we just had this really, really hilariously unscripted performance at the end, which was basically just people being announced and up to the stage and posing, having lots of pictures taken. Mm. And Miss Jason came along as well and delivered a quite remarkable story.
That was amazing, actually, wasn't it?
It was so amazing. Moving.
Yeah, it was.
The idea was that Jason would come onto the stage and sit facing us with a mirror and a microphone and get dragged up in front of us and talking to us. And after about 10 minutes, Jason just got up and said, "This doesn't feel right," and came down amongst us, just sat on a chair, stopped putting the drag on and just talked to us. And it was unbelievably moving. And actually, we still have that on film, actually.
It's
but
so good.
Haven't done anything with it yet. But Jason was incredible. And actually, Jason still talks about how it changed his life.
Wow.
And almost everybody that took part has also said the same. Mm. The drag queens themselves, we have nine new advocates for us in the drag queens, which was remarkable. And the feedback from the participants was ridiculous. The increase in self-confidence and motivation was enormous.
Wonderful.
And so we hope to do it again. I'm currently getting feedback. Again, 6 months later, does it still have a positive impact on your life? And hopefully, based on that, we might be able to get some more money out of the Gilead, who owe us millions,
there
really,
are
don't they?
Yeah.
They owe us so much. Are they your sponsors?
No, there are other sponsors, but yes.
Yeah, Gilead, we need more money. Is that allowed? No, that's too bad. It's there. So we need money from them. It's only a few thousand. It's not much. So we can do Drag Queen for a day too. Maybe we can do Kate Bush for a day for
that'd be great.
Trans people.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe we can do Drag King for a day.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something we'd love to take forward. But
possibilities are endless, though.
Yeah, they are.
Did you get much interest after the drag queen for more people to do it?
Yes. Yeah, we have. There are people. There are drag queens. The drag queens all want to do it again.
Well, I saw. I bumped into one the other day, and he was really looking forward to it and saying, "Oh, it was so good," and wants to do it again. And a lot of the people wants to get involved in it. Other drag queens. So yeah.
I met during that some of the most amazing people. I absolutely love Heather Duster, who is your mentor.
My mentor, yeah.
She was amazing.
Yeah, she was good.
And I went to this year's Big Brighton Drag Pageant, and I think four of the drag queens that took part were taking part in this year's show. And I was sitting in the second row. She's going, "I'm their house mother. They're mine. They're all mine. They're all mine." And screaming at the four of them as they came on. And I'm very proud to say that Glue was in top three. Of the show, which was incredible. And Heather was robbed, of course, but no, it was amazing. I absolutely love that world. It's changed from the misogynistic drag of the 1960s and 70s to just this most beautiful art form that encompasses everybody. And it was amazing.
And it's a great way to tell people about HIV, isn't it? Because you've got
the
people are entertaining crowds.
Yeah,
you know, they're standing up there being proud, and you know they know about HIV because they've worked with people living with HIV.
Yeah.
So they can dispel any myths, and you know they can be all inclusive within their shows as well.
Yeah. Would you do it, David?
I wouldn't say no.
I take that as a yes.
I'm not quite ready yet.
There you go. You got one there.
Think about it.
Definitely. You can.
Have you done it, Alan?
Of course not. I may have tried a few things on in my time just to make sure they were suitable. But what we also did with it afterwards was we took the whole thing, without the actual dresses, to the National HIV Nurses Association conference in Birmingham this year.
Yes.
And we were fortunate enough to be allowed to give an oral presentation. So we actually did a slide presentation on the workshop, and that was so well received by nurses up and down the country. Wonderful. And it was quite remarkable that the way they took us to their hearts was incredible.
That's how it works, isn't it? Getting the message across like that in different towns. And
yeah.
So we're going to come to your next recommendation, Lucy. She was engrossed in what we were saying.
Do
you remember, so your second choice, music choice?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you remember what it was because you changed it?
Oh, I did. I did change it. Yeah. So it's Waterfalls by TLC.
Yeah. Why did you choose that song?
Yeah. It's like, do you know what? Because when you initially said about choosing some music, I was like, oh my gosh, because I'm sure like all of us, I love music. It's a huge part of my, and I've got loads and loads of vinyl at home and, I mean, ridiculous amounts of records. So it's like, oh God, how do I do that?
It's difficult to choose.
Yeah. But I guess thinking about HIV, obviously, and my journey with that, and that's why I changed it. And I guess what it is it has a really poignant story to that song. I mean, I know obviously that song is about somebody living and dying of AIDS at that time, because it was back in the time, you know, and that's what it's about. But basically what happened for me when I got my diagnosis, it might have been 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, I was around at a friend's house, and obviously at that time I was still in complete shock. I was all over the place, and I was in her front room. And she was on the phone to a friend of mine, and they were both in floods of tears going, oh my God, you know, this is, you know, just talking about me and what was going on for me, and really, really obviously very upset. And my friend said to her, she said, well, what's Lucy, you know, how is Lucy, what's she doing at the time? And my friend came into the front room, and I was in her front room with this blasting, full blast, dancing and singing at the top of my voice to Waterfalls. And she said, she's singing and dancing at the top of her voice to Waterfalls. And they both were, crying but laughing. And I just think that really encapsulates that moment, that time of, like, for a moment, I was just listening to music and I was free. Yeah. And I was just totally, like, blocked out. And yet my two friends were there in floods of tears. And I think that just speaks to the world of, you know.
It's a great track, actually.
Yeah.
Shall we have a listen?
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Come back soon.
HIV Hour, 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and DAB Plus Radio. And we all know, living with HIV for as long as we have, that our needs are constantly changing with changes in treatment and lifestyle changes that we make. I'm really pleased to hear you say earlier that the Beacon is going through a period of change, as we all must do. And it's great to hear that the Beacon's listening. So how do people get in touch with you, and do they refer themselves to your services?
It's quite easy, really. If you've got access to the internet, you can go onto our website, which is www.sussexbeacon.org.uk, and you can find there, you can find some of the information about our services, and you can find out ways of contacting us. Or you can email me directly, which is alan.spink@sussexbeacon.org.uk. Our telephone number is 01273 694 222. Just remember, we're changing. Our services are for you, not for us.
Yeah.
That's a good message to get across, isn't it? Have you got anything else? We've come to the end of the show, unfortunately, because it's been great having you both on the show.
We'd love to have you back on.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been great. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And to see how things develop with you know, outreaching to
rural areas. We are really excited about where we're going.
It comes through in what you're saying. I can see the way you're looking at each other. You're raring to go, I can see that.
We're a team, aren't we?
Yeah. We're not just Beyonce, are we?
Not just.
Not just
a bit of Beyonce. Yeah.
We're not just single ladies.
Not just single ladies. Not just drag queens.
Single lady drag queens.
Yeah.
The Sussex Beacon single lady drag queens. Coming to a town near you.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep you talking, and it's great. it's good.
You actually stopped an hour ago, didn't
you? No, you've still got a couple of minutes. Carry on.
We've really got a couple of minutes?
No, you've got a minute left or so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, also, I think Alan and I are very forward-facing, so we do really enjoy coming out, speaking to people, whether it's, you know, about the Sussex people, but also about HIV and our stories and stuff like that. So, you know, we and just getting involved in the community, really, with our stories and our experience. And if there's,
we do have a really weird and wonderful connection.
We do. It's
you're like my beacon wife.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how it works, isn't it? Yeah. That's how it works. Because I know here with me, well, Sue and everyone on the show, we all get on really well and we have a lot. Just being comfortable, and that comes across, I think.
It does.
You speaking today has come across really well. And you
I sort of wish our daughter Eve was here.
We bring out the best in each other, but also we look after each other. And I think that's really nice. nice to know that, you know, there's that trust. And
I've learned so much about women and women's body the last couple of years. It's just not true. Things I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, I like that.
And they don't scare
that's
me anymore.
That's another show, by the way. I'm doing that motion. We're coming to the end of the show first. Right, really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having us.
And we'll finish with You Know How to Love Me by Phyllis. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Well, actually 2 weeks, actually.
Bye.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.